Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, the Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. Tim, some big news this afternoon.
What? What was it? I don't know. Is it about Nick Wallin going to the Sharks?
No.
Is it about Ken Hitchcock?
Ken Hitchcock, the fatty gets fired? No.
Is he going to be doing a TSN show next, do you think?
Yeah, for probably. Like fat, miserable sons of bitches.
Maybe him and Doug McClain can hug it out on TSN.
They'll start a reality show where they throw him into a gym and see if they can get him in shape.
Or they can start a reality show and see if they can find anyone on Earth who champions the Columbus fan base that is basically non-existent as those two have in their time.
No, actually what I was referencing earlier was the fact that Jared Cowan's actually officially signed a entry-level deal.
Start spreading the news, Graham.
Yeah, it's not really that big of a deal. I don't think, anyways. I think it's more of a formality than anything else, but
yeah, I think that's something that every NHL player has done and needs to do.
It's a good way to get a start.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you actually made a good point in the car coming up. Why don't you touch upon that a little bit?
What was my point here, Graham? I'm actually drawing a blank. We talked about this for so long about such a minuscule subject. I'm not sure which point you're referring to.
Oh, it's just the fact that once the season's over in Spokane.
Oh yeah, I don't see the Senators doing it, but I suppose if they legally wanted to, they would be able to bring him up, and that would provide us some good coverage in the playoffs too.
I think he'd go to there's precedent in Ottawa before, because Jim O'Brien last year, he went to bingo after a season was over with Seattle. So I don't think that's a huge leap, but
no, I think that's fairly common actually.
Yeah, it'd actually be kind of interesting to see if they actually put him in Ottawa, if Ottawa's hopefully in the playoffs at that point.
Well, I'd like to assume that the Senators are just going to stand pat with what they have going into the playoffs, but I could definitely see him making a stint in the AHL and just providing some peace of mind for the Senators brass that if in case someone got hurt or they just, you know, realized that they were icing Chris Campoli every night.
I was going to say, like, maybe that's a silver lining, because maybe he's a better alternative than a Chris Campoli or an Alex Picard.
Realistically, right now, those two are 6 and 7 defensemen on the Senators, correct?
Yep.
And Jared Cowan is a blue chip prospect, although we've heard a few knocks on his play over the second half here of the WHL season. But I think that's really a cause for concern. I haven't really, it would be all over the papers if he had really bottomed out, if he had already played.
You're going to analyze his work based on like 4 games of the World Juniors?
I don't think you can talk about the World Juniors anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's what some knee-jerk people are doing.
Willie Desjardins.
Yeah, Willie.
Probably. He's probably fueling all these rumors. the guy can't play my system. The guy's not going to play for Team Canada, and he'll never play for the Senators because I'm Willie DeJardin. You know, excuse me, I have to drop these fries in the deep fryer.
there's actually a comment on our Twitter account from one of the people that we're following, and he was questioning whether or not this could signal the end of the Brian Lee era in Ottawa.
That's what Twitter seemed to light up with today as soon as this announcement came forth, was that this somehow was an indication of Brian Lee's, you know, imminency to get dealt.
You figure, like, if he was going to get dealt, it would have happened by now.
I still think that Brian Lee will get traded this year, unfortunately. I've been a big supporter of Lee for a long time, and it's going to be a shame to see him go because there's no way that we're going to be able to get a quality return for Brian Lee. And I think at this point, you're better off riding out his bum potential in the organization than flipping him for scraps. Are you kidding me? Andrew Burnett, we're going to trade Brian Lee for a 38-year-old grizzly motherfucker.
He's a power play specialist is what he is.
Who's never going to, like, is he going to play again next year? I don't even know what his contract situation is. But why on earth would you make such a bonehead move? I don't think Murray's stupid enough to do that.
Yeah, you can't play that guy like top 6 minutes either.
No.
He's just a power play guy. Essentially, what he is Dave Andrychuk late in his career.
See, like, ideally here, if we're going to start getting into some of this stuff, if we're going to see Brian Lee traded, I'd like to see a Puglio S trade where the Senators are taking back another prospect who maybe hasn't lived up to the hype, someone like Peter Mueller in Phoenix that you and I both have, you know.
The thing about Mueller, though, is, like, he's actually produced at the NHL level, you know? So I don't think Phoenix has done some stupid stuff in the past, but.
Well, Brian Lee was Senators' best player in the playoffs, what, 2 years ago? So, I mean, he proved that he can
hang that on a resume.
He's proved, yeah, no kidding, on a team with Danny Heatley and Jason Spezza in the lineup, and you're the best in the playoffs.
I mean, Brian Lee's our Corey Haim.
I guess that's not really much much of a measuring stick there. But that's what I'd like to see. Just, you know, flip him for someone else who's maybe had a rough go of it, who hasn't been treated the way they maybe should have been treated by the organization, and hope for the best.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but moving forward here, so this Cowan thing is just going to basically signify the beginning of his NHL career. Obviously, the Senators are going to hope to have him compete for a roster spot next year. Obviously, he's done in Spokane, so it's on to the pros for him.
Well, after this season, yeah.
Yeah, I think he'll be given every opportunity possible, and maybe then some, to make the team. And hopefully Carlson's development keeps climbing the way it has, because you really don't want to be worrying about two inexperienced defensemen on your blue line this year.
I think the one thing that Cowan has going in his favor is the fact that Campoli and Picard are restricted free agents at the end of the year. I don't see them having a future probably beyond this year.
No.
So from a numbers perspective, why not? Give him a shot.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. And also on our RFA list here too is Mr. Brian Lee.
Yeah, if you're Brian Lee, why would you even consider re-signing in Ottawa?
I think you might ask for something outrageous, yeah, and then go to arbitration, get bitter, you know, get your final kicks in, tell them that they never meant anything to you.
You probably figured, though, he'd ask for a trade before any of that happened, though.
Yeah, probably. Maybe he has asked for a trade. Maybe Brian Murray just said, no, we don't do that in Ottawa anymore.
Well, if Brian Lee had asked for a trade, I'm sure we would have heard from it from the Binghamton insider, Kevin Lee.
Yeah, I'm sure that would have turned up somewhere. Apparently, though, hasn't he already been traded 5 times now, according to various bingo outlets?
No. Actually, the rumor I heard was that he was looking for real estate in Cornwall, because that's where he'll be playing next year.
That's right. That's right. Until the mayor debunked that rumor. Followed by spokespeople from the Ottawa Senators. I love that quote. Just loved it. He is not an accredited journalist. Like, just
who doesn't cover our team?
Leave it alone. Leave it alone. Right? It's like finding dogs or finding shit outside your house and wondering if it came from a dog or a human, right? At the end of the day, it's still shit. It doesn't really matter.
All right. So switching gears a little bit, Ottawa is on a 9-game winning streak. They're in Buffalo tonight, that little armpit of America.
Yeah, I believe when you drive into Buffalo, the sign doesn't say armpit of America anymore. It says, God, if you're going to give the United States an enema, stick it in this city.
Yeah, nothing ever good comes out of Buffalo, do they?
Oh, except for punchlines. Punchlines are very good for Buffalo. I quite enjoy those.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what's Buffalo renowned for? Wings?
Mustard stains on wife beaters. They got a bunch of universities there. I think that's, I don't know if anyone goes to them for all these janitors who work at them. I have no idea. It's terrible. Like, you've been to Buffalo before, right?
Briefly, just on the outskirts.
Oh, man. When you drive through that city, the only thing that even looks proper in downtown is the hockey arena, but it's surrounded by, like, shanty towns and, like, this strip mall that's completely vacant. Bunch of hobos drinking scope and eating meat off bones.
It's like the East Coast version of Cleveland.
Meets the Flintstones. Except you can't find women as thin as what's her face there?
Wilma.
And what's the other one's name? Betty? Yeah. Yeah. So heading into tonight's game in Buffalo, there's a lot of big motivating factors for the Senators to pull this one out and continue the winning streak. Obviously, the most important thing about this is for them to continue the winning streak. What do you think Corey Clouston has drawn up on the message board to get the guys going today? There's a million different things you could look for here, but what do you think is the most important thing for the Senators to remember in this game? Not that I want some, Hockey Night in Canada type, cliche quote from you, but realistically, what's good for these guys?
Probably the only bulletin board material that he has right now, besides being a division rival, is the fact that Buffalo's in first place. And that's a target. That's a legitimate target that Ottawa can pursue over the next couple of games. I think they're, 5 points back right now?
Yep, they're tied
with
Pittsburgh right now.
So I think Buffalo does have some games in hand, though. So it's important for Ottawa to win tonight.
Yep, it's a four-point game.
Yeah.
Of course, you can never address the importance of that enough.
I just hope in tonight's game that someone fires a puck off Rob Ray's head if he's between the benches.
Would it do any damage to that guy?
Does he
have any brain cells left to lose? I think Donald Brashear punched the last of them out in what may have been his last NHL fight, actually.
You know what Ottawa should do for these games where Rob Ray's around? Is hire like Dennis Vial as just a color guy. Let them fucking go at it again.
That would be fantastic. One of the things that I'm concerned about tonight, not concerned, but I think will be interesting to see how they respond to, is this break they've had. They haven't played since when? Saturday, right?
Saturday afternoon, yeah.
Yeah, so they've had a lot of time off here to
think about it. Yeah, I guess that's probably the biggest concern in the middle of a winning streak like that is the amount of time in between games. When the team's rolling, you just want them to keep playing. And obviously there's a little bit of concern going into tonight's game, but again, it's Buffalo. They're in first place, division rival, 5 points back. Go get them.
Yeah, I hate to even suggest it here looking this far forward, but it'll be nice to get like a micro sample of what this team is capable of, like this new Ottawa Senators, the 9-game winning streak Senators is capable of after a little period of rest. And then we'll be able to see that again after the Olympics, which I'm sure everyone's going to be shaking the rust off. And then going into the playoffs, how is this team going to be able to respond following a layoff?
Yeah, no, I guess that's a question that I posted on the website for the poll. I was just interested in our readers' opinions. Are you worried that this team is peaking too early?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a fair point because, there's going to be a 2.5-week layoff, so.
Well, how many games do we have left here? 20-some games? 24, 25?
Tonight's game 57, so, yeah, 25.
Yeah, so it is a little bit early to peak. I would have preferred them. I wouldn't want to be, going into the playoffs on a 5-game winning streak after playing 500 hockey for the last 2 months of the season or anything.
I think we kind of touched upon it last week, too, with Nate, was the fact that the strength of schedule is a bit easier. Once you get back from the Olympic break. So, I don't know. Maybe this tough schedule right now and the fact that Ottawa's doing well is something they can build on going forward. But I just hope they don't let up too much in the second half.
Well, I think most importantly, what we took from all this, you and I personally, is that from now on, after the Olympics, we have to go through and predict the outcome of every game in the studio here, botch them all, and just keep pulling feet from our mouths like it never even happened.
Well, no. That's, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think you might also want to take this opportunity here to pull another foot out of your mouth and maybe reconsider the things you may or may not have said about Erik Karlsson a little bit earlier in the season. Do you have any response to people out there who are saying this guy's a bum? He was...
I never said that.
No, I'm talking about you. You as the bum. This bum saying Karlsson can't play, he should spend another year in the minors, blah, blah, blah. What do you say to them?
All I said was, if we're going to waste a year on his... Like, my biggest concern was that they were going to waste a year on his contract when he might not have developed... Like, he could have developed in the NHL for a year and it wouldn't cost them anything. Like, I just assume what he could have produced wouldn't have been at a level significantly better than what we're getting already from a guy like Picard or Campoli. And I was wrong.
Yeah,
like you're looking at him now, it took him a while to get to this stage, but what he's doing right now is ridiculous.
Oh,
ridiculous.
Absolutely. The man is just controlling the ice out there.
So, yeah.
I can't believe I referred to him as the man. Or as a man, rather. Sorry, the kid is just controlling the ice out there. He looks like he's been, you know, how on earth did Chris Campoli, how does he get a roster spot over Carlson earlier in the year? Like, why was Carlson down in bingo?
Well, maybe it took him a while to get his confidence and swagger, right?
Yeah.
Because he's playing with a ton of it right now, and it's noticeable.
And I guess that was always what he was tagged as when we drafted him, was this kid with a lot of swagger.
Yeah.
I know people have been really tossing that word out with Phaneuf's arrival in Toronto and having, like, you know, charismatic guy who really likes to be the cock of the walk. And Carlson stepped into that role perfectly, I think.
Yeah, no, it's going forward. It's a great thing because Ottawa's blue line was the biggest question mark heading into the late stages of the season. Whether or not Brian Murray will address it at the trade deadline still remains to be seen. But Carlson's emergence is huge.
Seeing the kid play the way he's played over the past 2 or 3 weeks, what is his ceiling? Is this like a Nick Lidstrom kind of guy?
No, I don't think he'll ever be like the defensive guy that Lidstrom is.
So like Sandis Ozolinch maybe?
No, I
hopefully he has.
He's not like that either. Hopefully he doesn't drink as often. But I don't know. Like, I've always seen like a lot of comparisons to like guys like Brian Rafalski, obviously.
Okay. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I don't think he'd ever put up as many points as a guy like Mike Green.
No,
but
he doesn't play on that power play.
But even be mentioned in those regards.
Yeah,
or those respects.
Yeah, being mentioned in the same breath, I guess you could say.
Drawing comparisons between those two.
Yeah, of course.
Fuck, there's nothing wrong with that.
It's interesting, too, because the way that the Senators started out this year, we were really concerned about the blue line, and the top four has really emerged with a nice fifth as Matt Karkner rounding out the group. What do you think about the play of Filip Kuba? I think he's flicked the switch.
I thought his last three games have been phenomenal, especially that game against Montreal. His passing looks good. Like, he's a distributor, right?
Yep.
There's nothing really flashy about his game. Maybe he's not as physical as some guys want, but positionally he's very strong. But, what can you say about that guy? And the fact that he's playing really, really well.
One big thing that I've noticed.
Their defense has stepped up in the last couple of games, and it's been fantastic.
He's been a lot more aggressive in his pursuit and challenging for the puck recently as well. I don't know where that's coming from or if this is just something he's been capable of all along.
Maybe he has more confidence in his partner.
Yep, that's quite true. He can make a little bit more risky moves.
Yeah. So, I mean, when he's playing with Carlson, maybe it's not in the back of his mind anymore that he has to cover for this rookie's mistakes all the time because Carlson's play has stepped up so immeasurably.
Of course. And we were discussing this a while ago. I think it was on Hockey Day in Canada. We were talking about Anton Volchenkov's rookie season.
Yeah.
And we can all remember that Volchenkov was certainly not the player he is today back then.
Well, his rookie year was good. It's like Mazzaro's, too. Those guys had good rookie years, and then they didn't have a good partner. Sorry, Wade.
Regressed year two.
Yeah, and then they had, like, two bad sophomore years, and then, you know, people wrote both of them off, and obviously Mazzaro's is out of town now, but, yeah, I don't know. It just depends on your partner sometimes as well.
Yep, definitely. I think that, the way Chris Phillips jumps into the rush sometimes, which I've noticed a lot more this year, actually. Maybe partly due to the fact they notice he's got Volchenkov back there backing him up no matter what he does.
As long as he keeps scoring in overtime, nobody cares.
Yep, exactly. Score 6 goals all year. I don't care as long as they're all OT winners. That's fine by me.
Another guy who's been playing well lately is Jason Spezza. He's got his goal scoring streak going on.
Holy shit, eh? Spezza's back.
Did someone punch him in the head while he was out and say, you got to shoot?
Send trainer Brian Murray, his agent.
Just
I don't
wild.
Know.
I've seen a couple like bad turnovers at the blue line again.
But of course, that's going to happen. I think
that's part of his game. Just accept it.
We were counting in the game against Montreal, and I think through two periods he had three ridiculous drop passes, two of which were along the boards, and one was behind Montreal's icing line. And then we saw Kovalev actually take a page from Spezza's book and start doing some nifty behind-the-back passes.
Some one-upsmanship.
Blind passes to no one. So it's good to see Spezza's rubbing off on his teammates. But, yeah, unbelievable. What, 7 games tonight?
Yeah, if he scores tonight, yeah. I think it ties a record, I think, with Danny Healy or something.
Yeah, I don't remember that player.
Just repress those memories.
Well, I actually have no idea. I don't remember Danny Heatley ever scoring 7 games in a row. Do you? Do you remember when that happened?
I'm trying to think of like when he first arrived, because he had that massive point scoring streak then. I think that was like 14, 15 games or something like that.
See, when I think back on Heatley's production, I always remember like these games where the Senators will lose 5-1 or 5-2 and Heatley has both the goals. Or the Sens will blow someone out 7-1 or something and Heatley has all the goals. And then that's it. So heading into tonight's game in Buffalo, there's a lot of big motivating factors for the Senators to pull this one out and continue the winning streak. Obviously, the most important thing about this is for them to continue the winning streak. What do you think Corey Clouston is drawn up on the message board to get the guys going today? There's a million different things you could look for here, but what do you think is the most important thing for the Senators to remember in this game? Not that I want some, Hockey Night in Canada type, cliche quote from you, but realistically, what's good for these guys?
Probably the only bulletin board material that he has right now, besides being a division rival, is the fact that Buffalo's in first place. And that's a target. That's a legitimate target that Ottawa can pursue over the next couple of games. I think they're, 5 points back right now?
Yep, they're tied
so
with Pittsburgh right now.
I think Buffalo does have some games in hand, though. So it's important for Ottawa to win tonight.
Yep, it's a 4-point game.
Yeah.
Of course, you can never address the importance of that enough.
I just hope in tonight's game that someone fires a puck off Rob Rice's head if he's between the benches.
Would it do any damage to that guy?
Does he
have any brain cells left to lose? I think Donald Brashear punched the last of them out in what may have been his last NHL fight, actually.
You know what Ottawa should do for these games where Rob Rice's around? Is hire like Dennis Vial as just a color guy. Let them fucking go at it again.
That would be fantastic. One of the things that I'm concerned about tonight, not concerned, but I think will be interesting to see how they respond to, is this break they've had. They haven't played since when? Saturday, right?
Saturday afternoon, yeah.
Yeah, so they've had a lot of time off here to
think about it. Yeah, I guess that's probably the biggest concern in the middle of a winning streak like that is the amount of time in between games. When the team's rolling, you just want them to keep playing. And obviously there's a little bit of concern going into tonight's game, but again, it's Buffalo. They're in first place, division rival, 5 points back. Go get them.
Yeah, I hate to even suggest it here looking this far forward, but it'll be nice to get like a micro sample of what this team is capable of, like this new Ottawa Senators, the 9-game winning streak Senators is capable of after a little period of rest. And then we'll be able to see that again after the Olympics, which I'm sure everyone's going to be shaking the rust off. And then going into the playoffs, how is this team going to be able to respond following a layoff?
Yeah, no, I guess that's a question that I posted on the website for the poll. I was just interested in our readers' opinions. Are you worried that this team is peaking too early?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a fair point because, there's going to be a 2.5-week layoff, so.
Well, how many games do we have left here? 20-some games? 24, 25?
Tonight's game 57, so, yeah, 25.
Yeah, so it is a little bit early to peak. I would have preferred them. I wouldn't want to be, going into the playoffs on a 5-game winning streak after playing 500 hockey for the last 2 months of the season or anything.
I think we kind of touched upon it last week, too, with Nate, was the fact that the strength of schedule is a bit easier.
Yep.
Once you get back from the Olympic break. So, I don't know. Maybe this tough schedule right now and the fact that Ottawa's doing well is something they can build on going forward. But I just hope they don't let up too much in the second half.
Well, I think most importantly, what we took from all this, you and I personally, is that from now on, after the Olympics, we have to go through and predict the outcome of every game in the studio here, botch them all, and just keep pulling feet from our mouths like it never even happened.
Well, no. That's, I don't know.
Yeah, and like, I think you might also want to take this opportunity here to pull another foot out of your mouth and maybe reconsider the things you may or may not have said about Erik Karlsson a little bit earlier in the season. Do you have any response to people out there who are saying this guy's a bum? He was...
I never said that.
No, I'm talking about you. You as the bum. This bum saying Karlsson can't play, he should spend another year in the minors, blah, blah, blah. What do you say to them?
All I said was, if we're going to waste a year on his... Like, my biggest concern was that they were going to waste a year on his contract when he might not have developed. Like, he could have developed in the NHL for a year and it wouldn't cost them anything. Like, I just assume what he could have produced wouldn't have been at a level significantly better than what we're getting already from a guy like Picard or Campoli. And I was wrong.
Yeah,
like you're looking at him now, it took him a while to get to this stage, but what he's doing right now is ridiculous.
Oh,
ridiculous.
Absolutely. The man is just controlling the ice out there.
So, yeah.
I can't believe I referred to him as the man. or is a man, rather. Sorry, the kid is just controlling the ice out there. He looks like he's been, you know, how on earth did Chris Campoli, how does he get a roster spot over Carlson earlier in the year? Like, why was Carlson down in bingo?
Well, maybe it took him a while to get his confidence and swagger, right?
Yeah.
Because he's playing with a ton of it right now, and it's noticeable.
And I guess that was always what he was tagged as when we drafted him, was this kid with a lot of swagger.
Yeah.
I know people have been really tossing that word out with Phaneuf's arrival in Toronto and having, like, you know, charismatic guy who really likes to be the cock of the walk. And Carlson stepped into that role perfectly, I think.
Yeah, no, it's going forward. It's a great thing because Ottawa's blue line was the biggest question mark heading into the late stages of the season. Whether or not Brian Murray will address it at the trade deadline still remains to be seen. But Carlson's emergence is huge.
Seeing the kid play the way he's played over the past 2 or 3 weeks, what is his ceiling? Is this like a Nick Lidstrom kind of guy?
No, I don't think he'll ever be like the defensive guy that Lidstrom is.
So like Sandis Ozolinch maybe?
No, I
hopefully he hasn't.
He's not like that either. Hopefully he doesn't drink as often. But I don't know. Like, I've always seen like a lot of comparisons to like guys like Brian Rafalski, obviously.
Okay. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I don't think he'd ever put up as many points as a guy like Mike Green.
No,
but
he doesn't play on that power play.
But even be mentioned in those regards.
Yeah,
those respects.
Yeah, being mentioned in the same breath, I guess you could say.
Drawing comparisons between those two.
Yeah, of course.
Fuck, there's nothing wrong with that.
It's interesting, too, because the way that you know, the Senators started out this year, we were really concerned about the blue line, and the top four has really emerged with a nice fifth as Matt Karkner rounding out the group. What do you think about the play of Filip Kuba? I think he's flicked the switch.
I thought his last three games have been phenomenal, especially that game against Montreal. His passing looks good. Like, he's just a distributor, right?
Yep.
There's nothing really flashy about his game. Maybe he's not as physical as some guys want, but positionally he's very strong. But, yeah, like, what can you say about that guy other than the fact that he's playing really, really well?
One big thing that I've
noticed... Their defense has stepped up in the last couple of games, and it's been fantastic.
He's been a lot more aggressive in his pursuit and challenging for the puck recently as well. I don't know where that's coming from or... This is just maybe, something he's been capable of all along.
Maybe he has more confidence in his partner.
Yep, that's quite true. He can make a little bit more risky moves.
Yeah. So, I mean, when he's playing with Carlson, maybe it's not in the back of his mind anymore that he has to cover for this rookie's mistakes all the time because Carlson's play has stepped up so immeasurably.
Of course. And we were discussing this a while ago. I think it was on Hockey Day in Canada. We were talking about Anton Volchenkov's rookie season.
Yeah.
And we can all remember that Volchenkov was certainly not the player he is today back then.
Well, his rookie year was good. It's like Mazzaro's, too. Those guys had good rookie years, and then they didn't have a good partner. Sorry, Wade.
Regressed year two.
Yeah, and then they had, like, two bad sophomore years, and then, you know, people wrote both of them off. And obviously, Mazzaro's is out of town now, but, yeah, I don't know. It just depends on your partner sometimes as well.
Yep, definitely. I think that, you know, the way Chris Phillips jumps into the rush sometimes, which I've noticed a lot more this year, actually, maybe partly due to the fact they know he's got Volchenkov back there backing him up no matter what he does.
As long as he keeps scoring in overtime, nobody cares.
Yep, exactly. Score 6 goals all year. I don't care as long as they're all OT winners. That's fine by me.
Another guy who's been playing well lately is Jason Spezza. He's got his goal scoring streak going on.
Holy shit, eh? Spezza's back.
Did someone punch him in the head while he was out and say, you got to shoot?
Send trainer, Brian Murray, his agent.
Just
I don't
wild.
Know.
You know, I've seen a couple of like bad turnovers at the blue line again.
But of course, that's going to happen. I think
that's part of his game. Just accept it.
We were counting in the game against Montreal, and I think through two periods he had 3 ridiculous drop passes, 2 of which were along the boards, and 1 was behind Montreal's icing line. And then we saw Kovalev actually take a page from Spezza's book and start doing some nifty behind the back passes.
Some one-upsmanship.
Line passes to no one. So it's good to see Spezza is rubbing off on his teammates. But yeah, unbelievable. What, 7 games tonight?
Yeah, if he scores tonight, yeah. I think it ties a record, I think, with Danny Healy or something.
Yeah, I don't remember that player.
Just repress those memories.
Well, I actually have no idea. I don't remember Danny Heatley ever scoring 7 games in a row. Do you? Do you remember when that happened?
I'm trying to think of like when he first arrived. because he had that massive point scoring streak then. I think that was like 14, 15 games or something like that.
See, when I think back on Heatley's production, I always remember like these games where, you know, the Senators will lose 5-1 or 5-2 and Heatley has both the goals. Or the Sens will blow someone out 7-1 or something and Heatley has all the goals. And then that's it.
Another guy who's playing well right now, Tim, is Jason Spezza. Tonight he goes for 7 games in a row with a goal.
Yep, tie for a franchise record
with Danny Heatley, I think.
Danny Heatley, I think that was his name, yeah. Yeah, I think that was it. So he's playing great hockey right now. Still those stupid, forgivable giveaways still exist. I mean, I'm sure a few people...
Don't stifle the creativity.
Yeah, some callers into the 1,200 will certainly be ripping him for that every time that goes on. That's never going to change. By the way, off topic, did you notice Don Brennan ripping the callers of the Team 1200?
No, I missed that.
Oh, that was a good digital face-off, and you missed it. Tim Baines and Brennan were talking about scrapping each other and how Baines was up 2-0 on him.
Does that surprise you at all?
I've never seen Don Brennan in person. I've only seen his bust photo from the of course, our famous Photoshop contest. But Tim Baines looks like a guy who could put a beating on a dude like Don Brennan, and apparently he has twice. But Spets is still putting a beating on the puck. Does that sound weird? I think it does. Maybe we'll have to edit that.
That sounds dirty.
Yeah, I think so.
Spets is a polarizing guy, though. So whatever he does, he's going to get a lot of flack from some sect of the fan base. But
how about
he's played well since he's coming back, and it's nice to see him actually shooting the puck for once instead of deferring to his teammates.
Well, he was giving this interview earlier today, and I want to know, is this the kind
of... I heard this. He was actually pretty humble in this interview.
Yeah, is this the kind of response that you would get from a guy like Spezza and, you know, people going to go one way on it and attack the hell out of him, or just be like, you know what, that's good. It's good to see him growing up a little bit, right? So I'll play the clip here for you right now, and we can all judge for ourselves. So you got guys like Kovalev, Spezza, back from injury or just back from the dead, wherever they were for the first half. And then you get a guy like Foligno going down following the big three injuries to Mahalik, Spezza, and Alfie. What impact do you think does the Foligno injury have on the rest of the roster? Or at this point, are you just, you know, happy? You know, even giddy?
Foligno's injury is like the one thing that Ottawa didn't... It's tough to see happen because he was playing so well and he was starting to find his role with the team. But, I don't know. Like, you look at Jesse Winchester, a guy like Sean Donovan, they're going to be hard-pressed to replace Foligno's minutes.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you can sit here and, you know, stare me in the eye and tell me that, you know, Sean Donovan or Jesse Winchester deserves those minutes more and will be as productive with them as Nick Foligno has been.
Yeah, and you can't replace him with Chichu either.
No, absolutely not. Chichu can't play on that line.
No, he's not. No.
No, there's no way. The other thing which is interesting about this is a long injury for him. Foligno was obviously just getting going here. He's an RFA at the end of this year. Does that maybe save Brian Murray a few $100,000 somewhere down the line?
Statistically, he hasn't been that strong, though.
Yeah, which is good. But I know when some guys go to RFA, they get paid based on... based on what they've done and their potential, right?
Well, I don't think Nick Foligno is going to be getting any offer sheets.
Good laugh at that one. We can all laugh. No, I don't think Nick Foligno is going to be drumming up any offer sheets, not unless... Hey, does Kevin Lowe still have a job?
No.
No, shit.
Well, he's president of the Oilers, I think, and that's it.
Oh, but he's not in charge of offer sheets anymore?
No, I think he can provide some advice and mentor... Tambellini, but that's about
so he can mentor a young offer sheet king like Tambellini.
Well, that's the only way to attract players to Edmonton these days. Blow them away with an offer.
We could go on about that for a bit about ways to attract people to Edmonton, but we'll keep this show at the end.
Meat on a stick and Gary Ock will be a writer there.
No meat in the bathrooms, which is why Don isn't a writer there in Edmonton.
Oh man!
So we also have the fall of Nick Foligno, and yeah, like he said in the paper there, what a stupid play he made there, right? Completely preventable injury, turns, broken leg, idiot.
Is that what they said in the paper?
That's what Foligno was saying. Yeah, he's like, it was a stupid play. He reiterated how stupid it was twice, just so everyone knew how stupid he felt, and we all agreed. It's a shame, though. It's a freak injury. to hockey, right? Brian Elliott.
Good news is Foligno will be gone for a couple weeks, so again, he gets to rest up for the playoffs. Yep. And Ottawa's had a lot of guys on their team like that, so maybe they'll be fairly well rested come the playoffs.
No kidding, but my biggest concern now is who's going to replace Nick Foligno on the American Olympic team.
He was never invited.
Don't take this dream away from me. You can't do that to me here, Graham. Sorry, Elliott. Let's talk about him. Is he our number one?
Is Elliott the number one?
Yeah.
For the interim, yeah.
So
he has to be.
Okay, so that's a maybe yes for now.
There's no goaltending controversy in Ottawa. I don't understand why people have to power trip and just throw shit at a wall and hope it sticks. There's no goaltending controversy.
You want to know if
Elliott is what Elliott is, but he's prevented like soft deflating goals from going in. That's the only difference in his game right now.
Teams that don't have goaltending controversies.
Well, name me a team that doesn't play two goalies regularly. Like the days of seeing guys play like 60, you know, getting the bulk of the starts, there aren't many of them.
Of course, they're gone completely. But I think what I'm getting at here with the goaltender controversy stuff, Graham, is that if you can ask the question, is, you know, player A, or in this instance, Brian Elliott, our number one goalie, and you either answer yes or no, in that case, there's no controversy. But when you spit out an answer like, yes, maybe, for now, you know, it's kind of weird. Like, it's going to be, I wouldn't say there's a controversy either. I wouldn't be jumping down that either. But
well, LeClaire's the number one. You know, they're going to ride Elliott till he cools off. And at that point, they'll insert LeClaire. And if he can't run with the ball, they go back to Elliott. But if he runs with it, it's his job.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's going to work. I don't understand why people are, I don't know.
So hopefully the same footsteps that Brian Elliott heard when Mike Brodeur was busy killing it in his games.
Well, you hope so.
Hopefully LeClaire is going to address that as well. I mean, I saw things like the Sun published a big article. Not an article, but a little snippet, rather. Don't know how I went from that to a little snippet, but discussing how if Pascal LeClaire doesn't right the ship in Ottawa for himself and for his career, this could be his last stop in the NHL.
No, that's not true. He'll be a backup.
It was in the Sun. It was in Garriott's Sunday
it's
column.
It's got to be true.
Then you know it's true.
Fuck.
It didn't Come get on. Spiked. It happened.
I wonder Someone's going to give him a job. Like, look at how many times like guys like Scott Clemenson have bounced around the league.
Yeah, Jason scored a few goals on him, apparently.
But you know what I'm saying. Like, there aren't goaltending is always going to be an issue moving forward. Like, Martin Gerber was in the league last year.
Yeah.
You know, like Toronto picked him up and used him.
But for the Leafs, yeah, that's where you want to go with that one.
If you have any kind of athleticism as a netminder, somebody's going to take a chance on you. It's just the way it works.
He's injury prone as fuck, though.
So what? So was Damian Rhodes in Atlanta, like dealt a ton of picks for him when he was in Ottawa.
But he doesn't play hockey anymore. He's too busy getting hit in the head with things.
That's fine. But what I'm saying is, like, you're always going to get a shot, you know?
Yeah, like he has the skill set to be an NHL goalie. He's shown this before. Whether or not he can actually...
But you think about it. You look, okay, how many games has he played this year? 25?
Yeah.
How many games did he play last year? 9?
Yeah.
So you're basing everything that he's done on, what, 34 games of work in the last 2 years? Like, come on. He has, you know, what I'm saying is he's never had a time to really get in a groove. And he was playing well before he took a puck in the face.
Yeah, he was, but also what I'm saying here is how many games did Martin Brodeur play over the past 2 years? Because he doesn't have those health question marks like Pascal LeClaire does,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're all freak injuries.
Yeah, freak injuries happen to freaks, though. I'm going to take the month of August off just to get you off. I'm freaking. I'm going to clear the tabletop. Let's take a photo of a goat in a boat, and then we can float in the moat and be freaky. Let's take my body and we'll cover it with honey. Stick some money to the honey. Now I'm covered in money, honey. I go outside onto the ledge and push my ass against the glass. You can act like you don't know me. I take a cup and then I put it on my head, and I just stand there being freaky with a cup on my head. I told you I was freaky. I told you I was freaky, baby. You didn't believe me. Don't look at me. I told you I was freaky. Look at me. Girl, let's get freaky. Let's make two life-size dolls.
hips to your hips. I nibble chips off your hips and watch the moon eclipse. I'll go outside and get some leaves and pretend to be a tree. You can be a squirrel and store my nuts for me. I told you I was freaking.
So more big news for the city of Ottawa today. Apparently, we've tossed our hat into the ring to host the All-Star Game in 2012.
That's not new.
It's not?
No.
Oh, that's right. It's not. Roy Mulacker talked about this already, didn't he?
Yeah, over a year ago.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of going through the formalities now, but I don't know. I guess people have short-term memories in Ottawa.
Besides kids age...
Our memory's short, except when it comes to Patrick Lalime's soft goals.
and John Muckler's drafting record. if we were going to look back here and say, you know, has there ever been an All-Star game that you've particularly enjoyed watching?
No.
No?
No.
Not
the All-Star game for me was ruined in 92-93.
Why was that? What? Oh, that's right. The inaugural season, Sidorkovic and Brad Marsh.
Yeah, like Brad Marsh was there. Obviously, you know, they were honoring his career.
Okay. I guess someone had to.
No, but that was like the formality back then for like every All-Star game. You get like one invite to bring in like an old veteran who was retiring that season.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a nice gesture to pay homage to this guy's career. And the All-Star game was ruined for me when he scored. That's when I knew these guys aren't trying. Because when Brad Marsh scores, never happens.
No.
It's just a giant tease. I was 10. I realize this lesson now. This is like finding out like Santa Claus isn't real.
Brad Marsh just completely killed what should be the biggest exhibition of skill.
No, exactly. It's like that. It's like watching the Timbits play at intermission and Spartacat pretends to play nets. You know the kid's going to score on Spartacat, right?
Oh, Spartacat has a terrible five hole. Terrible.
Yeah, you might as well have thrown Spartacat in nets for the 92-93 All-Star game because Brad Marsh scored.
So it's... This leads me in nicely. Besides kids age 11 and under, does anyone actually give a rat's ass about the All-Star game and whether or not it's played in Ottawa? For me, it just means more traffic.
The one good thing that I think could come of it is the fact that Alfredson said he's not going to play in the 2014 Olympics.
Okay.
So maybe this event could be kind of like his last hurrah, you know?
Alfie's house party.
Alfie's house party. But, you know... If Ottawa couldn't vote him into an All-Star game, if they won the bid, then yikes.
Winning the bid to host the NHL All-Star game. It seems like a burden. It seems like a chore that someone should be forced to do once a year, right?
And then they have to find a way to vote Alfredson into the starting lineup.
Yeah, without having you know, the fans from Toronto. I think Toronto's probably the only team that's insecure enough that would... you know, that would do something as unclassy as vote against Daniel Alfredson getting into an All-Star game in his home city. I can't think of any other market that is as lowbrow and petty as that. Can you?
Raiders Nation in Oakland?
They would just piss and hurt you.
Throw bottles of poo at you.
There's the bottles of poo is actually a joke we read on the internet when researching Buffalo jokes tonight. And, it wasn't even a good joke, but it had bottle of poo in it. You can find it, I'm sure.
Jason Spezza laughed at it. It was pretty good.
Oh, well, I mean, I was talking with Jason about that joke earlier, and he was just killing himself.
I'm never going to get tired of that audio.
No. What on earth was everyone thinking when that happened? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Is this still going?
Awkward laughter, 101.
Yeah, it's like seeing a karaoke machine turned off and the person just keeps singing.
Every year when they do the media sessions with the players before the season starts, just to brief them on how to handle them, they should just replay that clip over and over and over. He does. He comes off as a goofy nerd.
Oh, absolutely. It sounds like something you would have heard in actually Revenge of the Nerds. You know, right before, what's his face there, pounds them all.
Booger.
That's right. So no one cares about the All-Star game. Should we even be happy if it comes to Ottawa? Like for me, the only thing that I can look forward to from it is maybe we'll get a cool patch on our jerseys for the season that we can look at. I don't know.
The building will fill it.
Yep. Yep, they'll sell out the building, that's for sure.
Well, Sierra Leader did say that it'll stimulate, what, $30 million for the local economy, which is huge.
Yep, that is massive. It's a shame, though, that Scotiabank Place isn't, you know, in more of a prime location or didn't develop the property around it.
You're not going to go there, though, are you?
As well. I'm going to go there right now because that would make the All-Star game much better. That would make the All-Star game so much better. If you're going to invite the world or the NHL cities to Ottawa to partake in this showcase, you know, you want to showcase this city too, right? That's why Ottawa Tourism is involved in this. That's why City Council is involved
in this. Can do to make the All-Star game better?
What?
Not dress up Alex Ovechkin in a pair of sunglasses and a cowboy hat, feed him Gatorade from another Russian in Malkin, and pretend it's the fucking greatest thing that ever happened.
That was disgusting. Just disgusting. Didn't Ruti wear a wig in the skills competition, the Senator skills competition last year too?
He should light his skates on fire.
Fuck.
With fireworks.
That is...
You know what I'd do for a skills competition if I was coming in on a goalie? I'd have a Roman candle in my glove, and as I'm about to shoot, I fire it at the goalie.
See, I've got this move that I've
been
working
on. But they're
not
even, like, deking on real goalies. They're, like, local kids who, you know, it's just like, well, try and stop it, but...
See, I've got this move where I bust in, and I just go to my back end real quick. But what happens before that is I pull out a gun and I shoot the goalie, and it's called the Arenas move, and it's fantastic to see in real life.
For a real NHL skills competition, they should just drop like 100 hockey players in like a bar in the market and see who comes home with the most,
hell,
the most number of phone numbers.
If television's any indicator of what people like, we don't even need a skills competition. Just freaking get these guys figure skating, and that'll be good enough. And maybe have Mackenzie and Dreger dish out some rumors and some figure skating and maybe some pictures of Fisher and Underwood. And that'll be the showcase for the year. That's all I need. And maybe some naked pictures of the Blackhawks in limos. Jesus. Should have asked Darcy Lowen if he took that photo in Vegas.
What would you do to revise the skills competition?
Oh, nothing. I think you should scrap the entire All-Star game altogether. It's useless. Who cares anymore? Just... It gives the players a few days off. And
I don't think it really sells the game.
No, it doesn't. The Outdoor Classic is way more effective in that. I don't know the stats on television and all that other stuff, but it just, like, from a casual fan, it just seems like it's a much better use of the league's branding and of their skills just to throw two damn good teams out there in a baseball park in the snow and hope for the best.
You know what they should do? Is just have an NHL versus, like, KHL All-Star game.
Yep, that'd be interesting. I'd watch that. Of course, I'm curious about the KHL's talent. It's such a weird, strange, you know, mysterious league. I want to know what's going on over there.
It's just Robert Ash.
I want to know where all our draft picks from the early 2000s went. I want to see how they've developed. I gotta know. Like, I don't think there's any I don't think you can salvage the All-Star game. The NHL has just destroyed it. The players have destroyed it.
But I think it's different from the other game. Like the other major sports All-Star games, like you have the dunk competition and the home run derby, which are kind of like major draws.
Yeah, and big time staples too, right?
Yeah.
Big staples.
But it's like you don't get the same level of excitement for a breakaway competition or like shooting targets on a net.
No.
There's not like the wow me, you know?
Yeah, like you might, if you're going to have guys shooting at targets in the corners of nets, and it always amazes me that people can't hit them 4 out of 4 shots. So you play in the fucking NHL and you can't hit a corner. On 4 shots. Wow. But like, I think the next level to that is just having guys out there, you know, running laps and showing off their endurance and, you know, doing the bench press and whatever else and making it rain at center ice. But I mean, terrible. Shoot the foam out of the corners of a net and you want people to get interested in this?
Yeah.
No
or
way.
Fastest skill. Yeah. Fastest guy. It doesn't do it for me.
Like, there's like, you know, during, the MLB home run derby you see on Twitter and the blogs and stuff, they're all going and like instantly, you know, huge smash Ryan Howard or, you know, Prince Fielder crush that one or whatever. It's not like you see, you know, these things happening during this All-Star competition like, ooh, Ovechkin, really fast lap or, you know, shooting accuracy, Ovechkin, 4 out of 4. Ooh, you know, who cares? Boring. Next.
Obviously, Tim, there is no All-Star game this year. But there is the Olympic break, and people are thinking that's going to be a precursor to the trade deadline.
Yeah.
That'll be coming up in March. Obviously, you know, I don't know. We're not really privy to a lot of insider information, so I'm not too sure if Ottawa is going to be making some moves. But I know you wanted to hit on this, so what are you thinking as we get closer to the trade deadline?
Well, I'm not so interested in what Ottawa's going to do because I really don't think it'll be much, if anything at all. I mean, Brian Lee, I think, looks to be a piece that could be active. Apart from that, I really don't know what the Senators could do to their roster to improve it in real terms with the cap space they have left. But the one thing that's really interesting to me, and I called you about the Phaneuf deal, and or you called me, rather, and I said, well, you know, Calgary, now you know how it feels to get rid of one of your best players for, you know, maybe not the most ideal package. And
did Ron Hextall come out and shit on Phaneuf's reputation as a player?
No, he didn't tamper.
Oh, okay.
He didn't tamper at all with Phaneuf's reputation, even though it sounds like he's got, you know, the same kind of knocks as Heatley, right? Being a flake, not necessarily the most competitive
guy. Not well-liked in the room, yeah.
Yeah, doesn't really have a well-rounded game either.
And now he's one of the building blocks in Toronto.
Yeah.
And then
he fucking crushed Colin White with that fight last night. And everyone's awesome, and the Leafs are so good.
We're looking forward to Saturday night's game against the Leafs.
My God. I can't wait to hear Phaneuf just get interviewed at intermission and listen to that guy talk. My soul.
I wonder how many Phaneuf jerseys you'll see in the stands.
I want to know if a bale of hay has
a
higher
Ottawa?
IQ.
Oh, we talked about this earlier. Shit.
I'm looking forward to hearing him talk and really putting the face of borderline mental retardation on the Toronto Maple Leafs franchise. Because the guy's an idiot when he talks, right? I mean, you'd swear that he was just a bale of hay with a mouth. I mean, that wasn't a regional joke or anything.
He has a very dry personality.
Oh, God. He always looks like a vampire, too, like some sort of jock vampire.
He looks like an open mouth breather, though.
Creeps me out. Oh, definitely.
Every 100%. Time you see
100%.
Every time you see him enter the arena with the CBC, like before the game, it's like.
I'm not allowed to talk because I'm going bald, too, but man, I wasn't that young when he started.
Hey, guys.
Is that your Terry Marcotte or your Dion Phaneuf?
That's a Phaneuf.
Hey, guys.
The other thing that gets.
Oh, no, yep. Terry.
The other thing that gets me still is, you know, as we're talking about the return from Heatley still, and so I'm seeing the package that's been kicked around by the rumor media, maybe not the credible media. Some of them are credible, but some of them aren't.
Do you have a face to put to that media?
No, I don't, which is, I think, what makes them credible and what doesn't. but the package that would allegedly be going to Atlanta for Kovalchuk, and you'd have to assume it would be Kovalchuk with an extension, but they were talking, what, Oscar Moeller, Jack Johnson.
It's like the usual suspects.
Tubert, and first-round pick. And if Atlanta really does get that package from L.A. for even a rental Kovalchuk, my God, it makes Sutter look like an idiot. It makes Brian Murray look like a little bit less of an idiot, but wow, here we are talking about essentially a, you know, very, very similar player with a similar skill set and the same knocks on the ice.
You're talking like a one-dimensional scorer who's...
Yeah, your trigger man.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a fair point, but I mean...
It's all speculation, I realize that.
Do you think you get better returns at the deadline than you would during the summertime? Because, I mean, like when the Heatley news broke... Like, the information, because of his no-trade clause, was dissected for, what, months?
2 months, three
before
months.
Before he was dealt? Like, he was dealt in September, and that came out in June.
Yep.
So, I mean, like, he had his name dragged through the mud for, the last 2 months.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, I'm fully aware of the Danny Heatley situation and the return, but I don't know if you get a better return. Like, traditionally, that the thinking goes that you get a better return at like in the summer, right? When mm-hmm. you're going to make a trade, and it's easier when you're dealing with big contracts.
Yeah.
But
He even said last year, though. He's like, I really thought about asking for a trade at last year's deadline, but my agent talked me out of it.
The only thing that I can justify that with is maybe karma is working a little bit in Waddell's favor after that absolutely shit package he got from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
For Hossa.
That Angel was Esposito. Yeah.
That was a disgrace. Jeez. How the mighty have fallen, eh?
What'd they get? It was just him, Colby Armstrong, Eric Christensen, and first rounder?
Yeah, I believe that was it.
Yeah, it's not too impressive.
Scrubs.
Yeah.
Well, I guess at the time, Esposito maybe had a little bit more of...
But those are the kind of trades you see get made. You see a lot of depth players go because teams aren't willing to trade the frontline talent.
And you see a lot of draft picks go.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of draft picks get kicked around. mid-range prospects, high-end prospects.
So are you bitter at all about this Heatley thing?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm completely over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was reading someone, I was a blogger actually, was talking about the Senators' play at least. No, I wouldn't say I'm bitter about the return from Heatley. You know, I like the way the team's playing currently. I was reading some Senators blog. I think it was Sensei. I think it was Gerald Norton who wrote this, that, you know, this is not the best group of forwards we've ever had. It's not the best group of defensemen. And certainly, I mean, I don't think we've even had a good goalie ever. So, well, Hasek. So we can't really draw that comparison. But this may be the best Senators team as a collective that we've seen in a long, long time.
It's probably the hardest working one I've seen in a few years.
Yeah. And, you know, the abundance of those third, fourth line role, character, gritty players have really emerged to make this team, like to really develop an identity for this team. And it doesn't hurt that, you know, our fourth line, Rutu, Kelly, Neal there, they're killing it with goals this year, right?
Well, I think that's the one advantage that Ottawa has going into the playoffs is the fact that Corey Kluston can roll four lines. And that's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Because not a lot of teams can match that depth.
No, and I wouldn't really hesitate to put out any line. Like, obviously, you want to get your good matchups in. But if you're in a pinch and you're on the road and you got the fourth line out against, say, Washington's top line, eh, so be it, right?
Well, I'll think of how effective that shit-disturbing line can be with Neal, Rutu, and Kelly.
Maybe the best in the league.
Probably one of the tougher ones to play against.
Yeah, I keep talking about the Leafs, but Brian Burke talking about how he wants players who are tough to play against. And he kind of has this equation in his head that, you know, players who are hard to play against are big guys and apparently play defense and make, you know, millions and millions of dollars and eat up all your cap space. But you don't have to. Like, look at Neal, Kelly, Rutu. They just go out there, they grind hard, they hit. So I don't know about you, but what do you think the Senators are going to muster? Because it looks like the trade deadline's coming early this year with the pre-Olympic roster freeze.
Yeah.
I think this is when it's going to go down.
Well, you mentioned earlier how you think Brian Lee's probably the only, what, real expendable part that we have?
Yeah, maybe if you want to talk like...
But he, even right now, his salary is what, $1 million if he comes up to the show?
Yep.
So even if they trade him, they're not getting any anything that can go on the books.
No.
So, I mean, you're going to have to get at some point down the road, heading towards the deadline, if Ottawa's going to make a move, they're going to have to trade some salary out. Or they're also going to make a hard decision with Chichu and just say, sorry, buddy, it's business. We're sending you to the minors.
Yeah, we'll look bad in front of the league, but we're going to do this. Couple things here for you. I have a list of this year's RFAs and UFAs. I'm sure everyone's pretty familiar with them, but we've got Nick Foligno, RFA. Will he be re-signed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the RFAs probably will.
All the RFAs. You think Martin St. Pierre is going to get re-signed?
No.
Keller? Winchester?
Yes.
Picard?
Probably. And then flipped? I could see that.
Campoli?
I could see lots of signing trades.
Lee? These are all guys who are
Lee's probably going to ask for a trade.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if one of Picard or Campoli did as well.
No, the Senators have completely destroyed. Or maybe it's part of Brian Lee's fault too, but I'm not really privy to those conversations or to those actions. But between the two of them, somehow they've annihilated this kid's confidence and his you know, trade value.
I was thinking about this the other day. It's kind of weird to think about. The Mazzaro's trade, on the surface, based on what we got for him, you wouldn't think it's a good trade right now, right?
No.
Because obviously, like, Kuba's making the same amount of money.
Yeah, at this point, I wouldn't trade Filip Kuba for Mez, straight up.
Yeah, you would. He's a better player. But you,
Mazzaro's?
Yeah.
Mazzaro's
numbers are terrible, dude.
Yeah, I know they're terrible. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I'd rather have Kuba.
Here, well, let me redo this for you. While we're talking trades, I was kind of thinking about this the other day, Tim. Looking back in retrospect to the Mazzaro's deal, Ottawa made the move. They got the first, Picard, Kuba. Great trade.
Yep.
And to this day, essentially all we have now for that trade is Campoli, Picard, and Kuba. Still a good trade on the surface for Mazzaro's, who's been absolutely brutal in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, talk about regression there.
So, you know, you got your three starting defensemen. Well, Picard's in and out, but usually, you know, you have three guys who can be in the lineup on a nightly basis.
Three guys who have been in the lineup.
For a guy who's absolutely brutal right now.
Yeah.
But at the time, Mazzaro's trade value is really high.
Huge.
And we traded a first-round pick to get Campoli. So, it's a weird trade. You think about it, you're like, well, we came out of it okay. But you look at like what we could have had instead.
It's funny how it splinters off, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting.
The one thing that always kills me and a lot of other Sens fans too is the fact that we never got an offer sheet for Mazaros.
Instead, yeah.
My soul.
Could you imagine you had the second and the ninth overall?
Last year's draft would have been so interesting.
Incredible.
I don't even want to think about what we would have done and all the amazing scenarios that could have come from that. But
well, you offer like one of Duchesne and JT, and then you hopefully still have Cowan at nine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to talk about this. It's so disheartening to even contemplate. But
it's a weird trade though, because on, you know, right now it still works out to Ottawa's benefit, but in retrospect, you're like, wow, look at what we could have had for him. You know.
Yeah. Yep, that's quite true.
Can you think of any other trades that have been like that?
That have splintered off?
Well, just, you know, on the, from the outset, you're like, oh, we won this outright. And then looking back, and then you're like, well, it's good for us now, but fuck, we could have had so much more.
Oh, 100% the Havlat trade.
Yeah.
No.
That worked out really well for us.
That's always been shit. That's always been shit.
Maybe the Thornton deal?
Oh, how about the Chera deal when we traded him before he became a UFA and went to Boston? Remember that?
No, that didn't
remember
happen,
how much
either.
We got for him?
Yeah.
Then? Oh, geez. And now Wade Redden's in the Hall of Fame. And we'll always have the Chera trade.
Speaking of Redden, have you noticed a ton of people lately have been complimenting Carlson's overtime pass to Wade Redden's first pass?
Oh. I thought that was buried, that a whole subject was buried.
Oh, man.
Until idiots like us brought up the first pass to people who also think it's funny. But listen, there is nothing Wade Redden about that Carlson pass. That was a patented Carlson pass there. No similarities whatsoever. Interesting, though, that Redden and Carlson both have the same build. Carlson's a little bit shorter. But from what I understand, that Wade Redden wasn't exactly the hardest worker in the weight room in his time in Ottawa.
Carlson's actually not afraid to use his body to like make a play either.
No, I always like looking at the box scores that the Sun publishes, like the big, like the long.
Yeah, he led the
ones.
Team in hits the other night.
Yeah, well, he was tied with someone else, with Ruutu and someone else, but
Neil, I think.
Yeah,
Neil and Fisher.
But still,
or something.
He had like six hits in the game, and obviously he's not shying away from it.
Yeah.
Whatsoever, and maybe. He's always been a physical player like that. I remember some of the first impressions I had of Erik Karlsson was watching him crush guys. Well, crush guys as much as you possibly can when you're 5'10 and his weight. And thinking, you know, this guy plays with a bit of an edge. And
I think it's like his offense, though. He picks his spots.
Yeah. But maybe it just was a matter of him getting all these little elements of his game going in order for him to really develop that cockiness and the, you know, and the stubbornness and the sure-headedness of his play.
Well, I'm almost ready to pack it in. We're kind of going through topics like the fucking View.
Hey, look at me. I'm Barbara Walters. My breasts are showing.
But we were supposed to have a guest in. Obviously, it didn't work out. It's understandable considering the nature of the person's job and the time of year that it is as we head towards the NHL's Olympic break. But hopefully, we'll have a guest in studio next week. We have our toes in the water with a couple people, so hopefully something will come to fruition. And, you have anything else to say, Tim?
I'm looking forward to going and watch the Buffalo game. It's very rare, listeners, that we get to go out after the podcast and actually watch the hockey game. I think last week when we went out for beers with Nate afterwards, we only caught the very tail end of the third, so it'll be a nice treat to be able to take in the second tier as Jason Pominville takes a high-sticking penalty. And we get to start off on a power play.
There you go.
What great news, eh?
But thanks for listening to the show, guys. Thanks for reading the website. If you have any questions or comments, just feel free to send them to us via email.
Yep. Stay tuned. We're going to have something big for trade deadline day, too.
Yep. All right. Take care, guys.
All the best.
Just like an Elvis from hell. My-
My heart is broken, so I'm going to hell. Bury me way down deep in hell. I'm a Steve Jobs man, I wanna go to hell. Oh, there you go, turn up. Gonna buy me a graveyard of my own.